Beatriz Williams is the author of two bestsellers, Overseas and 100 Summers. Now there's another chart topper to her credit, The Secret Life of Violet Grant. Beatriz graduated from Stanford, then went on to earn an MBA from Columbia. As she tells it, Beatriz spent several years in New York and London hiding her early attempts at fiction, first on company laptops as a corporate and communication strategy consultant, and then as a mom. She now lives with her husband and four children near the Connecticut shore. Welcome, Beatriz. It's a pleasure to have you with us on the Book Report.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
The Secret Life of Violet Grant is two stories. What made you decide to take on the double challenge?
Well, I love the idea of a double narrative, and I think it's a great way to, first of all, build suspense and mystery and tease readers into wondering what happens next. But it's also a great way of juxtaposing two different eras, in this case, 1960s Manhattan, that very Mad Men environment, and a young woman who's working at an investigative journalist. And then in 1914 in Berlin, at the outbreak of the First World War, and an American who is living there with her husband and then disappears in the first days of the war.
I was really intrigued why you placed Vivian in the 1960s. What drew you to that era?
Well, I kind of backed into it a little bit. It's not as if I've been particularly fascinated by the 60s. I think it's a fascinating time. I don't actually have a TV in the house. We've got four kids, and the two of us work from home. And so at one point, we sort of turned off the TV, and so I never actually saw Mad Men. So it's not as if I was drawn into it by, you know, this sort of cultural zeitgeist at all. But the story itself, I got the original idea from a story on my husband's side of the family. His great-grandmother was traveling through Europe in 1914 with her son, and they ended up getting kind of caught up in the outbreak of the war, and they had to get off the train and, you know, finally made it back back home, and they had left a suitcase behind. And 40 years later or so, her son received a note from the German government with 100 Deutschmarks as compensation for this lost suitcase. I thought it would be even more fun and more interesting from, you know, the standpoint of a storyteller if the actual suitcase had come back and as a kind of a time capsule, you know, physical artifact of what had happened all those years ago. But then I realized, you know, 50 years would be a nice symmetric effect because the book would be coming out in 2014. So I made it 1964 because it's exactly the halfway point between now and then.
Oh, I see. You know, it's so strange to think that this is actually the 100th anniversary of the start of World War One.
It's really extraordinary. You know, I first became fascinated by that period from a class I took in college on turn-of-the-century Europe and the changes that took place in our society as we moved from being this very capital R, you know, romantic culture, very much steeped in that tradition of, you know, virtue and honor and duty. And then you have, you know, this disaster that was the First World War, and all those wonderful ideals were sort of crushed in the mud of no man's land. And what emerged afterwards was this sense of profound disillusionment and cynicism, and you have this whole modernist literary and cultural tradition that grew out of that, but also a lot of, you know, social change. And you know, it was, you know, good and bad in many ways, very dislocating, but it was also empowering and freeing for certainly, you know, women. If you look at the 20s and 30s, it was a, you know, extraordinary time to be a woman because all of a sudden, you know, the world was much more open to you.
Violet's husband, Walter Grant, was a real SOB, to borrow from the book, a philandering pig. Why did you make him such a shocking womanizer?
Well, you know, there's two things. And one, you know, it's very fascinating to me. We look at, you know, about a year ago, I don't know if we've heard of it that much over here in the States, but I tend to read a lot of British newspapers because my family's British and I lived there for 5 years. But if you've heard of, there's this this food writer, this food television personality, Nigella Lawson. And about a year ago, she was photographed in a restaurant. She's a very glorious, gorgeous, gorgeous woman. You know, she has a food show, and she's very well known and successful. And she was photographed in a very fashionable Mayfair restaurant, and her husband, Charles Saatchi, is actually holding his hand to her throat. And then at one point, he's also sort of pushing up the bridge of her nose. And it's, you sort of look at this, my God, how could a woman that you know, daring and successful and beautiful allow herself to get into a relationship where he's looks like he's controlling her. And soon after that, they split, and she, it was like she sort of was able to finally extricate herself from that. But I've been fascinated by that phenomenon. We see it a lot. I mean, even look at, you know, someone like Hillary Clinton and go, you know, forgiving Bill Clinton for his womanizing. We see that so often, these very powerful women who, you know, put up with it for whatever reason. So I thought that was an interesting idea to explore. And then also I was, the long story short, I was reading these Victorian sex memoirs to get a clearer picture of, you know, bedroom language and kind of the nitty-gritty of Victorian life. And I came across this memoir by a man named actually Walter. It was his pseudonym. He didn't obviously want to say who he really was, but he was a sex addict in Victorian London, and he was just such a devious, fascinating character that I thought I've got to kind of turn him into I made him a little more villainous than he is in real life, but I thought he'd be a very interesting character to explore in fiction.
Oh, well, he was, and I certainly hated every bone in his body. We're speaking with Beatrice Williams on The Book Report. Then there's Lionel Richardson. As you describe him, he was the right sort, bad and dangerous, the sort the ladies love to ruin themselves over.
Yes, God knows why, I think, is the coda to that. Well, you know, and part of it was, you know, I wanted to, you know, when Violet first meets Dr. Grant, he seems like kind of the perfect man for her, but that he turns out not to be. And then, of course, when we meet Richardson, he seems to be absolutely the wrong guy for her, and she starts to think that, you know, maybe he's the right one after all. So it's a bit how, you know, appearances can deceive, and what's really inside somebody, you know, you really have to understand that to find out. And especially if you're an ambitious woman, you know, who you choose to partner yourself with is perhaps one of the most critical decisions you're going to make. So you really have to understand what you're getting into and what kind of person is really going to support your dreams.
Hmm. I was charmed by your description of the musical parties in Berlin that included Albert Einstein on violin. These were based on fact, right? And were there other famous scientists in the book?
Indeed, there are, and that aspect of the book, grew out of a book that I had read many years ago called *The Fly in the Cathedral*, which is this fascinating, very layman-like account of the race to split the atom. And I learned that there had been this tremendous collection of personalities in Berlin at the time. You had Albert Einstein and Otto Hahn and Max Planck and Lisa Meitner. It was really, and they were friends, and they used to get together in, you know, someone's house in the evenings and have these musical parties. And I thought, how extraordinary, you know, what a great setting. You know, how would you love to be in that room at that time? And also I needed Violet to be an outsider. I needed her to have a passion, and I needed her to have a reason to be apart from her family, to have sort of left behind the people that she loves and her safety zone, so that she's in a very uncertain place where, you know, she's vulnerable in many ways, despite the fact that she does these daring things for a woman of her age.
Right. Well, what's next for you?
You know, I love, The Secret Life of Violet Grant kind of draws on the world that I first started creating in 100 Summers, which is set in the 1930s in New York and Rhode Island. But I love that world that I created and all these sort of waspy people, you know, who, you know, what you see on the surface is not what's necessarily on the inside. So when I created, Vivian, I made her a member of this family as well. So the next two books that I'm working on, they're not sequels exactly. They stand on their own, but they are also dealing with different members of this family. So you see characters walk on from previous books. And they deal with Vivian's two sisters, Tiny, who lives in Boston and turns out she has a few secrets of her own, and then her other sister, Pepper, will be in the next book after that.
Well, I loved Vivian. What a girl with spirit. And so I guess I'm very much looking forward to your next titles. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right.